broadcasting from the Unshackled Studios in Melbourne. This is Will's Front, brought to you by the Unshackled.net. Now here's Tim Wills.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a Wilms Front Fresh featured interview program on this Sunday, the 30th of June, 2024, last day of the financial year. We are broadcasting live on the Wilms Front YouTube channel, the Wilms Front Odyssey channel, and the Wilms Front Rumble channel. It is 9 p.m. here in Melbourne, Victoria, and obviously the big news has been overseas with what can only be described as the extraordinary first U.S. presidential debate between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, and the roller coaster of the final week of the UK general election campaign, with polling day on July the 4th, I should say. But that will all have to wait until Tim's news explosion, which will be on Tuesday evening this week at 9 p.m. Melbourne time, as tomorrow, Monday evening, I'll be seeing Tucker Carlson at the final Melbourne leg of the Australian Freedom Conference. But turning to my guest for tonight, he is a new Australian voice for freedom. On social media, those websites that our politicians are so determined to censor at the moment. Lachlan Lade is a bushman from Queensland, farmer, hunter, builder, and natural liver. So through his Dunder Viking accounts on X, Instagram, and TikTok, he advocates for Australian patriotism and history, the importance of resisting digital tyranny, and becoming self-sufficient to live outside of the system. To give you a taste flavor of his style of videos, this is his most recent one.
Yep.
Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen. A man's home is his castle, and I'm building an absolute fortress. I'm a big believer in castle law and the right to self-defense. You know, in Queensland, we aren't even allowed pepper spray. That's why I'm working with the libertarians. Return the right of self-defense, because we need it. We're living in a time like no other. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, have a good day.
Lachlan, welcome to Wilms Front.
Good evening, and thank you for having me, Tim.
Oh, thank you for, as you said, being up past your bedtime. I know one of my regulars, Linda Hunter. She claims that my shows are too late, calling me a night owl. I know that as a farmer, you start very early in the morning.
I wake with the birds, yep.
But it's when the rest of the world wakes up, I find. So that's when, obviously, developments happen in the US, UK, so.
Yeah, you're quite right, actually, because every morning that I wake up, it's an exciting day to go through the news, because it all happens while I'm asleep. No, you're spot on with that.
And now, throughout your videos, it's very clear that you're a natural speaker and clear communicator. What was the click in your mind that you wanted to start advocacy on social media and also start becoming politically active, because you've taken that next step as well?
Yeah, I have taken that next step, which is quite a big step. I've been politically active for a very long time. So when I was in high school, 16, I actually joined the Liberal Party with the local member of my area, and he gave me some opportunities to volunteer. You know, I knew he was a man listening to the people, helping to solve problems, and that sounded like a decent thing to be doing. And so I was, you know, really wanted to learn and partake in that. So that was where it started. And I left the Liberal Party during the pandemic and sort of was just all on my lonesome on the farm. And when Albanese was bringing in the referendum, which I thought was a very dangerous precedent and piece of legislation for our country, I really wanted to play my part in saying no. And that was why I just threw myself out there on social media to have a voice and to show others that hey, I'm pretty sure a lot of people feel this way and we've got to stand against this. It was just to get my voice out there, something that I was passionate about.
And so many other Australians joined you. The defeat of The Voice.
Yes.
There was going to be this, special body, extra rights for those who identify as Aboriginal, because that's basically the test. It was, we were so lucky that, enough Australians realised that this is something that was going to make our country more divided.
Most certainly.
And so it was, it restored a lot of people's faith in the Australian people after, too many, you deal with sheep, the Australian people acting too much like sheep during we shouldn't call it the pandemic, should call it the lockdowns and the mandates.
It was a real issue.
Up in Queensland, I know that your Premier Palaszczuk I think the Polish pronunciation of it, not Palaszczuk, she decided to put her own. She locked you down a few times if there was a couple of cases here and there. She's actually on 7 News Spotlight tonight. They're having a pandemic reflection, which actually doesn't look too bad. So what was that like for you? Because obviously, thanks to the farmers, we Australians were still fed even amongst all this tyranny. I think that if the food supply had dried up, then we would have seen more opposition. But because everyone was fed and they had their Netflix and whatever, that's why there was so much, you would say, compliance. And also Australians had become that the rest of the world sort of learnt this, that Australians do like being told what to do and put faith, if the government says it, we rely on the government to take care of us, then that's what we need to do.
They also printed a lot of money, which made it very easy for people to stay home. People who were earning more from just staying at home than they were from actually going to a job, which became a real issue. But Australians have never had a reason not to trust the government. It's always been a source of support to some degree. I mean, it was for my family when I was growing up, being a lower income family, the government was a great source of support. And, I could never have imagined that our government would do what they have now done to us, truly, that is the case for most people, because it was that event that saw many wake up to the reality. I just don't think we've ever had a reason not to trust, literally not to trust our government. Although they may be incompetent in a lot of what they do, they never directly harmed us the way they did during that period.
Well, Australia had been a nanny state for many years with the increased taxes on cigarettes and alcohol, and now we're seeing the pharmacy only vaping legislation passed. World first does not mean it's a good thing. So this, what you'd call it, public health fascism, was basically a culmination of all of that, and a government that you give the power to provide you with everything, because we do have a large welfare state, can take it all away from you.
Certainly, they certainly can. And oftentimes those commands weren't even coming from elected bureaucrats. I think there was an enormous test of our institutions that period, of which we're realizing now a lot of them failed. Every year the tax goes up.
It's like $15 for a pint, if you're lucky.
Yeah. So nanny state, very accurate description. I mean, we even have, we tell the stores what times they're allowed to open and close in Australia. Yeah. We don't realize just how much of our day-to-day life has been specifically structured in a way to just to keep us within the system. There's a lot that's controlled in Australia that it is unnecessary. I used to work, right, only on sort of a Friday to Monday roster. Friday to Monday roster, roughly. So I'd always have the week off. And I used to think to myself, how do these people work from 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, and still have, where do they have the time to go to the doctor or just go to the post office? You know, just to do the jobs that I can do on my days off and go to all the shops when they're open, right? Because I wasn't working. I just imagined that, well, this is why nobody has any time. This is why everyone struggles and is under the pump.
People did manage. I know I get a lot of feedback from older people who say, look, I can't believe that people can't cope with the shops being closed on Good Friday and Christmas Day. I mean, we were only open until 1 p.m. on a Saturday, and we all survived. There's a lot of that. It's history of Australia being, I mean, the whole reason why shop trading was liberated is because of civil disobedience. This hardware guy in, I think, Victoria, who, right, on the Easter long weekend, I'm staying open.
Yeah, okay. I don't actually know too much, so that's pretty cool. So he just wanted to stay open over the weekend.
Yeah, and of course they came down on him, but yeah, okay. People wanted to go to his hardware store.
Yeah, funny enough, I often think the one day that they're all closed and then you think to yourself, oh, I just want to go to the shops to grab this for the day. And I've always had to go to an IGA or more Drake's or something more niche on those specific days.
We don't have Drake's down here in Victoria. I remember the Drake's, he first went viral because some clown panic buyer who bought like 200 things of toilet paper wanted to return them, and so he said,
oh, true.
He like gave them the finger, and also he was promoting their Australia Day merchandise that they were selling. You're part of the Australia Month campaign by Ben Chan, Bogan Christian Lobby, who's in the chat with a lot of views. Tim, grow a mustache, Bogan tip. No, I'm not going to, because facial hair doesn't work well on me. I've got quite sensitive skin.
No, maybe remember, you can make an excuse.
I know that your current appearance, you've been much more wild with your hair and your mustache.
Yeah, well, again, I had never grown my beard to that length before, so it was down here. It was pretty decent. It was a fun experience. It suited the Viking look as well. And as well, I was throwing myself online on X, you know, probably the biggest social media platform there is, with no shirt. You know, I'm just jumping out there. I wanted to try and hide myself a little bit, but obviously now all that doesn't matter. But yeah, I like this, just this length here for me now. I don't quite look like a baby.
Well, the photo that you sent me, I asked you for like a professional photo, and you looked like very sort of square is the the term that I would use. And I thought, no, I'm not going to use that in the promotional post. I'll just use a still from your video. Because that's so that,
yeah. I've been using those just for now because they're from my old acting portfolio. So I do that just as a hobby for experiences, and well, it's nice to have good photos of yourself. So they've always been a boon to have.
Though you can look like a completely different person.
They were a few years ago, short hair as well.
I've always looked like this a lot for most of my life, though. Dusty Bogan will remember during COVID, the lockdowns, because obviously Melbourne is where we had lockdowns that lasted for months and months. The hairdressers were shut, and my hair got really, really long, and So though Dusty has never been a fan of though my chest hair, that's always always bothers him.
Yep. It was always a joke in high school for some people about that as well.
Now, also, what awakened a lot of people during the lockdowns and mandates is how the digital economy and the corporate infrastructure that have made a lot of our lives so convenient can be turned on us and be cogs in the Big Brother surveillance state. It was quite scary to see just how the Australians of all age became so accustomed to the QR check-in and that sort of thing on the phone. That was basically how I think the politicians knew that they could get digital ID into the Australian society next, because people downloaded the various apps. And obviously we have people who are being debanked for having the wrong opinions, being banned from things like Airbnb, which never happened in the 20th century.
No, we're in extreme times, and extreme groups are influencing these institutions and using them offensively against citizens of our country. And it's scary because we're looking at the merger of government and business. You know, the government is bringing in these mandates, the digitally medical IDs, the passport, now the digital ID, and you then look, who is the one enforcing it? Well, it's all the universities, it's all the big banks, it's Qantas and Jetstar, the institutions. Every time I fly, in similar vein, the political message of welcoming me to my own country, welcoming to my state, is announced. Again, it's a political message now being delivered through these private enterprises, pushed down from the top, the government. And I bring that up, and I want to make that very clear, because it's a form of fascism. It's a form of corporatism. It was Benito Mussolini, the fascist dictator of Italy. He said that fascism should be more appropriately called corporatism, because it's the merger of the corporate state and the corporates and the state. And I really think that's something similar to what we're facing now. Digital ID will be mandated and required to access business services. That's what I foresee, to log into your bank, or at least it'll be made easier through such methods to eventually be mandatory.
Oh, we've certainly seen with the Albanese government, it's more overt, government corporate quid pro quo, which is just called corruption. Obviously, giving the AFL money for its stadium in Tasmania so they would support The Voice, locking Qatar Airlines from more flights into Australia in exchange for Qantas backing The Voice. I think a lot of people saw that as, we like to think that Australia is not like those corrupt banana republics obviously we see it here in Victoria. It might not be illegal, but we have the big build here, or the big blowout, the big build with all the freeways and the train tunnels. That all goes to work for the CFMEU. They donate to the Labor Party. Quid pro quo goes around in the circle.
Yeah, it's just the cycle repeats. Yeah, it's that's it. I mean, we live in a democracy, but so much is influenced by big money, or those in the positions of power that are behind the scenes that never change. And you just have a revolving door of puppets coming through that. You know, once the numbers are high enough, they'll have control. If your price isn't your life, then you're for sale, as James O'Keefe, I think, quite appropriately said. So, we face a challenge that I think is unprecedented in our history, which is to really clean out a lot of what is just corruption.
And obviously, the other side of politics is not much better. You mentioned you're a young liberal. The Liberal Party would be great if it just followed what was on its website, but...
That's exactly what I've been saying, 100%. Yeah.
But they were the ones who set up the eSafety Commissioner, drafted the Digital ID Bill and the Misdisinformation laws. And obviously Scott Morrison, he didn't say that I didn't implement the mandates, but I gave the states all your medical information to set up the mandates.
I hold the Liberals more so to account for the degradation of the country than Labor by any means, because federally they've been in power for a long time and they've had the opportunities to be strong on their principles, on their values, and to come back with actual opposition and not facilitate this control that the state has continually had over our lives and interfering and being allowed to interfere in our lives. I have no fan of the Liberals any longer. I think they have long forsaken their values, and I'm not a believer in reforming it from the middle, from within. I want to tear them apart. Let them be forgotten to history and let new people rise, new parties rise, because I was a member for 9 years. You know, I worked as a secretary with them in my branch up north. I attended many national and state conventions. I was passionate and really wanted to play a part, and there were some good people for sure. But when the time that it really mattered, it was the pandemic. That was the time for them to stand by their principles. And if they actually had done so, we would be so much better off on every front. So, no, they're really responsible for a lot of the pain that we're in.
And you're a member of the Libertarian Party now, formerly the Liberal Democrats.
That's correct.
Ex-liberal, John Ruddock, is now Libertarian MLC in New South Wales and doing an excellent job. So is the New South Wales president, who's a ex-liberal MP, Ross Cameron. There was a lot who, because I've interviewed John Ruddock before. He was for years, he had the book "Make the Liberal Party Great Again," but realized, it was a lost cause, and came over to the Libertarian Party. But I think our duopoly is so very entrenched. I mean, I hope that, obviously, I've been covering what's been happening in the UK. There's the campaign for the Conservative Party to win zero seats because they've just been absolutely awful for the past 14 years. And obviously Nigel Farage is rising in reform. But there's never been a real challenger. I mean, the One Nation, United Australia Party, Libertarian Party, there's also Shooters and Fishers Party, won various seats at state and federal level. But obviously with Pauline Hanson back in when she launched in the late 90s, it was seen that her rise was seen that she could usurp the Liberal and National parties, but they certainly made sure to cut her down back then. I think we're in much more stuck than a lot of other countries. And there's no way in our system, like how Donald Trump took over the Republican Party. He was able to do that through their presidential system. But Dusty says, why is your mic right in front of the... He's talking about my microphone. Anyway.
Just to add to what you're saying, yeah, you're right. There is an incredibly entrenched duopoly that we are facing. And it will be the combined efforts of minor parties to make the public aware that voting for them is not the solution. You're right. Well, UAP are deregistered. UAP were sort of brought back momentarily by Clive Palmer. So after I left the Liberals, I joined on with them and I volunteered at the at the elections most recently. And again, just because I was looking for those who actually stood for what, you know, stood for Australia, really, at the end of the day, and the principles of what we stand by. So I went to UAP, but then they really didn't poll very well at all. I know they got Babette in, which was excellent, but in Queensland, they really didn't do very well. And again, I'm learning and experiencing all this, so I didn't know what to expect. But after that, sort of there was no branches, there was no established groups to really engage with, so I left them. And I started looking at One Nation, first time. And went to their events, got to meet Malcolm Roberts quite a bit, spent some time with him, volunteered at a few events as well. But in the end, they as well, they don't have branches, so they don't have any independent groups that will meet of their own accord to bring together issues of the community or to help find candidates for the community. They're very top-down controlled, so it is Pauline Hanson's One Nation Party. So me as an individual who is passionate, who I believe I can bring value, as I'm even now helping the Libertarians put together policy, there's no role for me at this level with One Nation.
I don't think that's the real Monica Schmidt.
I don't think so either. So that was in the end why I didn't really go hard with the One Nation, because it's all top-down control. There's not really a position for me to play a role. And what I loved about UAP, the time that I did join with them, is that those who joined on to campaign for the candidate, which was very humbling, all of them were completely brand new and have never paid attention to politics ever before. And again, the Libertarians, I think I've found something very similar. And they are a new party that's not yet registered in Queensland, that's ongoing right now. But they do, or at least from what I've seen, are people who will always put Australia first, stand by their principles, and are entirely grassroots, in a way that I haven't seen before. So you see Liberals, and the young Liberals was always kind of very, in a way, selected. I felt the people were always political people. They weren't just ordinary Australians. Definitely One Nation is more of that, but they just don't have the structures there to facilitate the growth that we need. And that's my goal, to just try and get as many people passionate and interested in politics as possible, and to help build up these minor parties, regardless of where they go. Ultimately, I think Libertarians, again, that's why I've joined them, will be a powerful choice and a good force, but just want to get more people active.
Also, it's important to build community as well, because it's not just about the political system. It can only do so much, but having building a community, a freedom community, one that is also yep. based on self-sufficiency. So over the weekend, Dusty Bogan Christian Lobby had the Aussie Highland Games, which you attended. So this was the video that he put together. I think he's going to put together a full episode on censored.tv.
And that was terrific, because just like you said, it was building community. So we, you know, I was there with as a representative of, say, Libertarians. We had One Nation members there. The British Australian community were there. The ANA were there, Australian Natives Association. So again, just Australians who are passionate about the country. That was the beautiful thing. That was the one thing we all had in common. You know, we all wanted to put Australia and the Australian people first. And we were there having a, you know, barbecue and lifting heavy things.
And you had a tug of war with Rob McMullen, who is an ex-United Australia Party candidate and also one of the original Rational Rise guys.
Go, McMullen!
Go, Robbie! The big boys! Go, Rob!
the racket.
You know, there's no better competition where you can, because you can go as hard as you like. You can't hurt him, so you can really get into it. I loved it. But I was really sick just a few days before that. That took everything I had. I was knackered. But yeah, love it.
Yeah, yeah. You're not developing long COVID, do you think?
No, I'm nearly over it today. And I long COVID, you'd have to have taken, you know.
Because, well, there's still these people who are addicted to the narrative and claim that, because I follow a lot of them for a laugh. They claim that COVID can fry your brain and cripple your organs, and there's these people who say we're long COVID sufferers and we're just bedridden. But it's only, it seems to affect people who already into the narrative.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, definitely. And unfortunately, look, there's always going to be a group of people you'll never be able to have a conversation with and help them to understand. But look, this goes back to trust in the government. For all the evidence that I see, and even I see regulators in Australia, or someone put out in Australia that, you know, long COVID is not a real thing. That was out in the mainstream news.
It was your chief health officer, Dr. John Gerrard.
There you go. That's right. That's right.
We shouldn't use that.
He's out there saying that. We haven't looked into long vax. I think we definitely should. You know, there's a lot attributed to that now.
Well, we're on YouTube, so yeah. it's the one platform which is.
You're right. But, you know, ostensibly. They should look into that, like anything. So we have, yeah, there's a lot of people that are suffering from something.
Nathan Swindon says, is anyone here racist or just me? Have you been called a racist yet?
Not yet, no. And I say not yet only because I'm pro-Australian. You know, I want to protect our country from just the rest of the world, which is not the safe, lovely place we may have once thought. We have two wars going on right now. You know, we're very lucky to have such a peaceful, or was what such a peaceful country, and we should be really working hard to preserve that. It's something very special the rest of the world envies.
I've seen, well, Australia change, and also where I live and grew up change as well, and I know that watching the mainstream media is not good for you, but the 6 p.m. news these days, it's just basically a crime report about this person was a victim of carjackings, a home invasion by these youth gangs. They're already out on bail.
It's a massive issue. It really is. Because, well, it's these good times create weak men create hard times. It's that situation. We you know, people who break the law need to have a consequence to their actions. I'm talking with ideas with the Libertarian Party about this now. I think the youth, especially, they need to have all that energy. It needs to be devoted to something. If they're out there causing crime, then direct them into a boot camp or working with the councils or something. Put that energy into something constructive. Maybe they can even make money while they're doing it, so they feel like they're having purpose. But yeah, we have to get them off the streets so they're not repeating. If they're not Australian citizens and they're breaking the law, then just send them back from where they came from. I don't even think that's a controversial idea at all. I mean, they're effectively criminals if they break it. They are. They break our laws. They're criminals. It's not our job to take care of them. Yeah, it's just people got disconnected from realities. Because they're not dealing with realities. They're living behind a desk. They're bureaucrats. That's what bureaucrats are, to rule from a desk. So it's like the story I always think of, right? My grandfather's a cane farmer, and he needs his pistol because sometimes there's wild pigs in the cane. Now, you're from Melbourne, you may not know, but cane grows really high, meter 5, maybe 2 meters tall, way above my head, and thick. You can't see with a meter in front of you, right? So you don't know where the pig is. But down in Brizzy, they're like, hey, we're going to take your pistol license. You don't need this anymore. And my grandfather had a big argument, had to go from North Queensland, 13 hours drive back to Brisbane, just to show them pictures. Hey, this is what cane looks like. I can't see the pigs in the cane, because they have no idea the realities of what it's like. So crime is out of control because you've got people who invent new ideas of how to manage society and want to test them. Well, they've been testing them for the last few years, and well, look at the situation we're in.
Well, it's the latest crime stats. Now, Queensland is the crime capital of Australia. Mm. You've got it from Victoria, whoever thought that was possible. And we had that horrific stabbing of earlier this year of grandmother Vylene White by a Sudanese youth, which in front of her granddaughter, which
daylight, during the daylight.
Yes, at an Ipswich shopping centre. And your government is also still, even though Queensland has overwhelmingly rejected The Voice, still giving away public land to these Aboriginal corporations, which it's basically ceded. Like they talk about sovereignty never ceded. This is actually the sovereign nation of Australia ceded to a corporation which says it acts for local Aboriginals. And banned from it if you're non-Aboriginal.
I think native title and that land acquisition by the Aboriginals is going to become a big topic this election. So that's something I'm learning a lot more about, but I'm seeing a lot of issues rising. And it is. And that's why The Voice was particularly dangerous, because you're effectively saying that this minority of the population, which is about 3%, now have an additional vote on top of everybody else. Well, you're right. It's looking a bit like the situation in Israel and Palestine, where you've got a two-state solution. They're trying to put them as their own state. And the mainstream The mainstream has put all the news that doesn't fit them under the rug. See, I get all my news from X, Twitter, so I don't miss any of it. But if you're not connected there, of course you will.
Under Elon Musk, you can find the real news there. It's no longer, because YouTube is just completely filtered with all mainstream news, and also Facebook has no news at all, because the mainstream media was basically trying to, with the help of government, extort money from them for sharing their content. It was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever heard, that Facebook should pay news companies money for directing traffic to their news websites.
Yeah, I remember that.
The mainstream media, now they're running a campaign to raise the age to use social media for 16, enforced by a digital ID. They were not going to get into the debate about youth on social media. But, of course, the solution is just more digital tyranny. But mainstream media don't like the social media companies because, well, it's where people like us are promoting.
Coordinating, talking, finding friends, allies. They call it, in a way, network states. You know, we're no longer separated by distance or oceans, walls. We can reach each other just like this, and it's changing the culture. Sorry, the messages popping up distract me. I am not used to that.
Yeah, my audience is very as you can see, they like to have a bit of fun.
Of course.
Now, I know that over the years, the Queensland Labor government has introduced various laws which have encroached on farmers' rights, and also their ability to manage pests such as feral pigs. And there is not enough appreciation for, especially when so many people were thrown out of work to save us from a virus, just how reliant we are on farmers for whether it be fresh fruit and vegetables, meat. And in a lot of your videos, we see you with the animals on the farm, and then the end result of farming as well. We're both animal lovers of both animals, alive and dead.
Yes, quite right. Quite right. Yeah, I mean, and who, you know, farmers are being kept, my uncles and my grandfather, they're all cane farmers, and they're spending as much time now, if not more time, doing paperwork than actually working on the farm because of government mandated paperwork, bureaucracy. And the reality is, no one will take better care of the land than the man who lives on the land, because without that land, he can't live. It's again, really basic things. But when you're not living on the land, or at least associating with people who are connected to the land, you are not going to be aware of that. So, yeah, I try and include the animals in all my videos because it's entertaining. I'm sharing with people my life. And I truly do live the way that I try and showcase. You know, we have about 12 cows that we move across the paddocks. So we have about 1, 2, 3, 4 paddocks, 5 paddocks that we move them through. Regenerative farming, it's called. We have pigs that are now, as they say, in pig. So soon we'll have a heap of piglets. We just had a cow have a calf, but unfortunately it was the first time ever that we had a dead calf born. So I'm not going to be milking the cow in the next weeks, unfortunately. I'm very disappointed about that, actually. I wanted to be making my own cheese, cream, butter. Anyway, it'll come around again. So yeah, I want to include all that because love the animals. Dog, my best friend is my dog, Geralt. We've got quite a few dogs, actually, because we breed golden retrievers and we eat them. We eat them. Not the dogs, but the cows, the chickens, the pigs. Yeah.
Obviously, you mentioned the calf being stillborn. There would be a lot of, because farmers do care and love for their animals, there would obviously be some difficult decisions that have to be made. I want to get your opinion on, because Kirsty Noem, the governor of South Dakota, she shot her chances of being Trump's vice president for writing in one of her books that she put down one of her young dogs for killing one of the neighbor's chickens. And she wrote she hated that dog. And there were people defending her, saying, like, this is life on the farm. What's your opinion on?
Yeah, well, I've never. Okay, I know the story. I didn't actually know it was just for killing a chicken. I feel like that's not really an issue with.
The dog also wasn't, in her words, like being a hunting dog very well.
Right. I mean, Geralt, my golden retriever, has killed a couple of chickens and a couple of guinea fowl, and you've got to discipline them, but you got to do it in the moment, right there. A nice little backhand on the bum, and they learn very quickly. But you've got to do it well timed, and you have to make hard decisions sometimes. I mean, recently we had a horse. My dad, it was a horse my dad has had since it was just a foal. Unfortunately, she broke her leg. She was about 18 years old, and well, we can't fix that. We can't spend thousands of dollars to fix the horse's leg, and Dad had to put her down. So we do have to make decisions like that. Sometimes some chickens come out of the eggs. They can be deformed, or they're not going to make it. You've got to put them down. So that's part of life. But you obviously, I wouldn't like to say numb. I'm always aware of what we're doing and I'm conscious of it, but it doesn't affect you emotionally. You can't let it. You just respect them, treat them the best you can as they're growing up, and then they give back to you and you get what you gave to them.
Has the biosecurity state come after you and your family yet? Because, what is it, a million chickens have been killed Australia-wide?
Yeah, no,
bird flu, and also pigs can give us swine flu. So that's the net. They're constantly trying to scare us at the moment about, well, bird flu in particular. And I think... you remember the swine flu pandemic of 2009, where we didn't need lockdowns or masks or anything like that. It just sort of
disappeared by itself.
Yeah, well, that was actually from a swine flu mixing with a bird flu in Mexico. So it was basically flying pig flu. So
gotcha.
So is there more biosecurity regulation? So, well, they hope you're not creating the next pandemic.
Oh, well, look, what we do is very small scale. So we have, it's about 24 acres, and it's just enough to provide for my family, my parents. So I don't think we're on anyone's radar.
Because down here in Victoria, Dan Andrews, when he was premier, he passed new sweeping biosecurity laws, where if there's a biosecurity risk on your farm, they can just come in without a warrant and destroy everything.
Yeah, I think again, this is where the government's getting way out of control. For example, pasteurized milk. We should have access to raw milk if we choose to. I don't. When the government's coming onto your land to do anything that they think is for the betterment of everybody and to tell you what to do, I think there's a real issue. I wouldn't be for that.
They go after raw milk. They've been going after that for years, and because dairy cattle in the United States have been infected with bird flu, that's another they're using that to crack down on raw milk.
There's a risk to everything. There's a risk to absolutely everything in life. I grew up on raw milk and turned out absolutely fine. You know, I have made butter from raw milk before myself. So, yeah, I grew up, I actually milked the cow. That's why I want to start milking the cow again. And I believe it's incredibly more, it's much healthier for you. You've got all the natural bacteria. It's not processed, which is what pasteurized milk is. It's actually processed milk. All the good stuff has been killed out of it. You know, that some people who are lactose intolerant, actually most people who are lactose intolerant can drink raw milk, but they can't drink pasteurized milk, and it's to do with the lactase, or one of the proteins that are destroyed in the process. So yeah, by trying to protect society, by the government interfering, telling us what we can and can't do, they really just keep making us sicker, because it's not one size fits all, and there will always be issues, but you've just got to let, again, the circle of life play out.
Well, I often say you could get hit by a bus tomorrow. That's what I feel like saying to these people who are still wearing masks because they're scared of getting COVID. Yeah. They're probably also will be volunteers for the bird flu vaccine, even though the pandemic hasn't happened yet. So how can you have a vaccine for something?
Well, that's right, it's YouTube. You're right.
Now, obviously, somebody like me has grown up in the suburbs. So like to sort of change to a sort of like you raised on the farm, let's say it's very easy for you to live natural living. What sort of advice would you give people who they're in the suburban grind and they've hardly got a
background. Yeah.
How do they make the sort of because the system does, it makes you comfortable and especially during this, the cost of living crisis has been exacerbated by, as you said, just all the money printed during the lockdowns. So a lot of people think, eating organically or doing this, that sounds expensive.
Okay, well, food-wise, if we just touch on that quickly, like I eat carnivore. My whole family does. My mom and dad have been doing that for close to 5 to 6 years. So we only eat meat. And frankly, that's quite affordable when you compare to buying tomatoes and lettuce, cucumbers. The price of those is exorbitant right now. And I think they're completely unnecessary. I thrive. I truly thrive with just butter and kangaroo sausages. When I go to Brisbane, that's all I eat. That's all I've been eating for the last week. But for those who want to move to the farm, I mean, it is a huge responsibility, I'll say. Things are going to go wrong. You know, you're in for an entirely new life. I mean, we're still blocking the fence to stop dogs from getting out every now and then, especially when there's a dog on heat. It's nearly impossible to keep them contained. Our neighbors are an example of what you're talking about. They've recently moved from the city to the bush now. And they had some pigs. They decided to give us the pigs. They had some sheep. All the sheep got eaten by dingoes. They had a cow. Again, we had to help out with that. It didn't do very well. Because they don't know what it takes, the responsibility that it takes, and how to deal with the issues that do occur. Like the dingoes were a real problem. Wiped out about all 15 sheep they had. And we have vegetables growing in our backyard as well. So I do eat tomatoes, chilies, garlic, onion, but for the most part, I eat the meat. That's the most valuable part of the meal. I get all my nutrients from that, and everything else is just because I do enjoy it. That's probably the best summary I can give. Again, yeah, you're right. I did grow up on the farm, so things come a lot more naturally, but start with something small. Start with a couple of chickens. You only need a small cage. When I was in Nepal, they only had like a meter by 50 box, and they could keep their chickens in that. And every house in Nepal basically had one or two chickens that would, you know, pop out an egg every day. So that's a great way to start. Cows are a pretty big thing. You know, they need a lot of space. But chickens are the best thing you can do for yourself.
And yeah, they're not going to give you bird flu. Not that you should really fear that.
Correct. The pigs. So we're going to have piglets for the people in the chat. Yeah, we have two pigs. They're both in pigs. So we'll have a heap of piglets. And we've never had goats. No particular reason on the goats. We just never have had them.
How do you get kangaroo meats?
You just go for a drive down the road. You find a few carcasses. No, Woolworths have a large, and Coles have a large variety of kangaroo steak, kebabs, and sausages is what I get. $8.50 for a packet.
And it's obviously there has been this. It's not just the vegans who've been attacking animal farming. I'm not sure if you've known people who've experienced eco-terrorism, but now you have the new eco-terrorists, the World Economic Forum, who claim that farming is too environmentally unsustainable. They want us, for some reason, they believe that bugs are disease-free and that they can be farmed on scale with minimal impact.
Yeah, I couldn't regurgitate to you specific science behind, what I've learned. Amazing YouTube channel. He covers this content as to why, raising cattle is much, much healthier for the environment compared to mass plant farming. Let's just put it simply. It's a real information war that we are facing in trying to help people see, I guess, the errors in their ways. You're right. There is massive influence coming right from the school system. I mean, we're taught, right? The food pyramid. Breads are the most important. And going up the scale, the one you need the least of is the oils and fats. But look at us. Every single cell in our body has a fatty membrane. We are fat. If you're not eating the right type of food, your body is being made of who knows what. I always like to say, you are what your food eats. So if you're eating takeaway food all the time, well, you're just eating fake stuff and your body is just not going to be made right. And I think the same goes with a lot of these people who are then pushing plants, then pushing bugs. Well, we're not a plant and we're not a bug. So if you're eating these foods, these and then the nutrients in those foods, they have to be converted into a bioavailable form for your body. But if you're eating meat that's already very similar to what your biology is, it's much more easily to absorb. Well, we are mostly water as well, but I mean that every cell in your body has that fat around it. So if you're eating, for example, seed oils, plant oils, and not animal fat, well, you're being made of something that is actually quite volatile. So you know that if you heat seed oils, they oxidize, which is like rusting, they become cancerous. Well, you don't want your body being made of that. You want your body being made of the highest quality, most natural fat available, which is animal fat. So we, for example, every time we kill our cows, we'll keep all the fat from them, render it down into a tallow. I did a video actually just recently on my Instagram showing people all the fat that I would melt down for a day. And that is very similar, in fact, identical to how most of our grandparents lived. So, my grandparents always had the lard that they would cook in. And most of our fast food chains also cooked in this lard until, I think, around the 1980s, because someone came out with science, and we know what the science, how accurate it can be, that this animal fat that they were cooking with was causing the heart disease, right? So with that connection, well, everybody had to get rid of animal fat. But really, that was never the cause. And you've seen maybe recently some studies coming out where finally they're admitting that red meat does not cause cancer. Red meat does not cause heart issues.
Again, this is the mainstream media. How many things cause cancer? That they've reported over the years.
Dozens and dozens. It's all fear.
Now, you mentioned your neighbors who found out that obviously farming is a lot more complex. They needed to get their head around a lot very quickly, and obviously it's not just the hard work and obviously the difficult decisions that you have to make. It's also it's to manage the finances. It's like you can't live paycheck to paycheck as a farmer. And there has been, I know that Bob Catter has spoken about the suicide of farmers for many years now. One of your videos was, well, it wasn't focused on farmers per se, but the suicides that occur in Australia focus on male suicide, since we are going through a year of demonizing masculinity. The implication by all of this domestic violence crisis is that natural masculinity is bad. That,
yeah, we have a real crisis with that, as you're touching on. In Australia, 10 people every day commit suicide. 2 of them are women and 8 of them are men. And there is just silence on that issue. You know, that's not slowing down. I think that mental health issue faced by both men and women is only exacerbated throughout the last few years and is only getting worse, because I've read before when I was younger, a major cause of divorce is always the financial situation. And I think the financial situation now is on everyone's mind with the situation and the living crisis. So you're going
to
see relations.
I contributor to domestic violence as well.
Yes, that's right. So, you know, the government, you know, if you want to really, you know, I think, help those issues, you need to try and put more money in everyone's pocket, because that'll just alleviate stress, alleviate some of the pressures. But yeah, role models, masculinity, it is definitely all under attack, and it makes people feel like, well, what are they supposed to be? What are they growing up to be? What are they supposed to do? Especially for young men, you see a lot of young men my father's age and our grandparents' age, well, when they were my age, they were married and had families, had children. That gives you responsibility. It gives you purpose. That makes you grow up faster, so much faster than anything else can. And because we have really damaged that foundational structure and those roles in society, I think we're very sick, we're very distracted, and we're all struggling a lot more because of it.
And the Highland Games that we were talking about before, that he's just left the chat now, Dusty. There were more men there than women. It could hear some.
Yeah, well, definitely more masculine games. Yeah. The ties were pretty heavy, but.
And there was this, I think just she was trying to get like a name for herself, saying that we need to stop men congregating together. Like, reminds me of the COVID restrictions on meeting.
So
that the events such as those where men get together and do masculine things and work on being fit and do do sorts of things like chucking wood and tug of war, that it's those things that contribute to, like, there's some people who believe that men, when they get together, they just talk about all the ways that they're going to oppress and be sexually violent against women.
Those people are not living in reality. And it's a shame that those people are in positions of power and influence. And that's why a lot more normal people need to start paying attention to what's going on. And that's happening. You know, I'm really confident that we're winning the narrative war, winning the information war. But we have to remove these people, because if they build society in their vision, well, we know they're taking us down a technocratic dystopian future. It'll all be control.
Now, you're a libertarian, but you're also a nationalist, like myself. There's a lot of nationalists, particularly the white nationalist identitarians. I'm not sure where you are on what makes an Australian, but there's a lot that believe that libertarianism and nationalism is incompatible. Now, obviously, there are SJW, social justice warrior, open borders libertarians. You and I are not one of those. But what do you say to some nationalists who say, "Oh, they're incompatible both"?
So, look, I think, in honesty, we're all libertarians to varying degrees, because we all believe the government should be restricted in some way from interfering in our lives. So it just depends, well, how extreme is your definition of libertarianism? So for me, I very much just want to be left alone, to live on my farm, to keep my paycheck, and to raise my family in the manner that I see fit. And I want the government to remember that, protect the borders, and protect my way of life. I don't want them interfering or pushing their agendas. I just want them protecting the Australian way of life to ensure that, you know, as young people growing up, they should and can have that dream to buy their first home, to then build a future that's better for their children than themselves. And if we foster that with a strong border, and when I say strong border, I mean, and I think right now we really do need to stop where we're at, because we've blown way over, and we need to have a very stern, sensible conversation about the values and the quality of people that we're inviting here, that we're bringing here. Because, look, growing up, those who've had the biggest influence in my life were not Australian born. They were refugees to Australia from Hungary, from communist Hungary and from communist Vietnam. And I would consider them both, you know, true blue Aussies. And they contribute to society and have had a hugely beneficial impact in my life. So, you know, if you were to ask me, I think it matters a lot more what your values are, what your principles are, and what you stand for. Because we have, you know, I've grown up in a time where, well, when I left home, right, my best friends for the first few years were all Kiwis. And then I fell in, well, they're all Kiwis, even lived with Kiwis. And then I moved and I lived in Sunnybank in Brisbane, which is basically the Chinese community. I was still living with Kiwis. They're my best mates now, those people. But now I'm living in the Vietnam community, roughly, near Inala. So we're very diverse here. And I think it's unrealistic to imagine a single ethnicity here. We're a terrific experiment in a multicultural democracy, but we do need to be very stern and strict and take very seriously, you know, when people immigrate here, they sign a document that they do stand for these values. We need to take that extremely seriously.
The problem with that is that people can just sign it and ignore it.
They can. And that's what I mean. There needs to be a conversation, perhaps restructuring, but we have to, government just needs to protect the lives that we used to have, because nothing's improving, right? We just need to go back a few years and things were a bit better.
Well, diversity hasn't strengthened our society, and some cultures certainly haven't. Well, I shouldn't use the word integrate. I should use the word assimilate. That shouldn't be a dirty word. You mentioned the Vietnamese Australians. They'd fight for Australia over communist Vietnam. The Vietnam they left doesn't exist for them anymore. But that's just the Vietnamese here. I mean,
yeah, it's a niche group,
Very different. A lot of the Chinese Australians here, it's said that a lot of the Chinese Australians voted against the Liberal Party last election because they didn't like the Morrison government attacking the Chinese Communist Party, even though it's the government, it's not the Chinese people. But so. There's a lot coming here that still have dual loyalties, or they still have a single loyalty back to their home country. They come here because we are, despite us getting poorer, we're still very wealthy by global standards. There's people coming here who they're just here for the standard of living and the superficial things, and they still have their loyalty back home.
Yeah, well, precisely. And that's always going to be the case. Maybe some adjustments, as in foreigners not being able to own property in Australia. I don't think that's...
Well, that would be quite a, well, noble idea, because it's not talked about in the housing debate that foreigners, they can buy new properties. So it's, but like there's so many new property, like that includes like things that are like old home knocked down, and then there's like subdivision units and that. And we're getting a lot of, because I do prepare for my own new show, this, we're getting a lot of millionaires coming here, and so they're snapping things off the plans, when they say that Melbourne and Sydney are the world's most livable cities, that's basically for the rich global citizenry class.
Right.
It's not meaning for people like...
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense. I when you put it in that context, because I see those lists and I always think to myself, how are they so high? Yeah, that makes sense. But sorry,
I mean,
take away from where you were going.
Yeah. Like Vienna, that's an unaffordable city in Europe, but it's constantly at the top.
Right. Yeah. So all I can say is their conversations I'm pretty eager to start having, because 10,000 people a week, over 500,000 a year. Oh, and I don't know where these people are going, where they're from, who they are, because apparently we still have shortages in most of our industries. So, it's a real problem. And the truth is, we know it is to maintain the facade of growth in our economies. Without it, we are going into recession, maybe a depression, and it's due.
Well, it's mainly to, like, a lot of the jobs are ones to take care of the older population. That's basically what the Yeah, we have an aging population, and we haven't got time to get into this. Like, I don't like how it's, you know, become part of our culture just ship elderly parents off to a nursing home. Just look at how people in nursing homes were treated.
Well, very good of you to say that. I completely agree with you. It's a real, it's a terrible part of our culture.
And so, like, this is why a lot of this expenditure is, well, having people to, like, back 20, 30 years ago, the family chipped in to a lot of elderly people. They stayed and died in their homes. It was very uncommon, aged care 30 years ago, 40 years ago.
Definitely. We've really just gone in a way of a society where, you know, kids go to daycare, the elderly go to daycare.
That is why we have a job shortage, because there's lots of people doing jobs which are ones that have been created recently. And so the jobs that, well, the skilled jobs, of course there's this gap. And we also have a part of the aging population is that not as many are having children, and the economic times make people less confident to have a family.
Precisely. I mean, look, again, it's cost. Everyone is slaves in this system. That's right. And they're looking for ways to keep you working longer. That's why they want your kids in childcare, because then you can go to work more. I really want to go back in time a little bit to where a single income family can raise a family of four, which is my experience growing up. I'm the oldest of four children. Dad worked, mum stayed at home. But that's just not a realistic possibility anymore. But if we could once again return to what belongs to the people, our taxes, which is our life, our money, well, we would have more to go around. We can afford to take care of our parents when they're getting old. We can maybe pay a younger babysitter to come to our home. When the money's in your hands, you'll spend it best. So I'm a real big believer in just putting as much money that belongs to you back in your hands, because you will spend it best.
And we've already covered just the amount of waste of government money, and corruptly handed out as well. So you and I both know that the solutions are there. It's just a matter of getting this, changing the Australian mindset about government, that they're not your friend, and they're not supporting you.
Well, yes, I think you're right in that. I think you're right in saying that we don't want to scare people and make the government sound evil, as if you, when you're trying to win the hearts and minds of a people. But there needs to be a realistic expectation. You know, that's really becoming my crusade, because we do live in the system that we work together to create, the Westminster system, our democracy. But it only works if we all participate. And when we disconnect and just let those who want power play the games, well, this is where we're obviously going to end up. So, you know, I'm not really loyal to anyone except for, you know, the Australian people and the audience that I speak to, because I just want to help, again, make my private life better by returning to what belongs to us. So if we can clean up the government, return to us our money, take it out of our lives, we can't fix it. Anything can be fixed, you know, and the times that now require it to be fixed, well, they weren't going to be easy times. It was always going to be a challenge by the time we got here.
Yes, there's a lot, as you said, hard times create strong men. And obviously, there's a lot. Australia is definitely at the crossroads at the moment, and we certainly hope that there are better times ahead.
Well, it's a long-term game. So, for example, 1995 in Queensland, the Liberals had 44 seats, Labor had 44 seats, and one lady, Liz Cunningham, independent in Gladstone, she held the power. So not a single thing happened in Queensland without her permission. And that's, well, I'm speaking for Queensland here, but or even federally, that's our first goal. We just need enough good people to take the balance of power, to stop all the crazy stuff from happening, to stop them pushing through digital ID without debate. You know, that's the first step. And then just election by election, you can take power with enough good people.
Well, October 26 is Queensland State Election Day. We'll certainly be covering it here at the Unshackled, and we'll do an election night live stream, which I'll extend an open invitation to you in advance if you want to come on and be part of the panel. We're having one this Friday, 5th of July, for the UK general election live stream as well. So we cover all the elections here at the Unshackled. It's been
good stuff. Yeah, terrific.
It's been fantastic to speak to you, Lachlan, and I introduce you to my audience, and I'm certainly sure we'll be hearing a lot more from you in the future.
Most certainly. No, appreciate you inviting me to come on. Any opportunity for me to speak, practice, learn, and just share my thoughts with everybody, more than happy to do so. So thank you, Tim.
And I will come up to Queensland sometime soon and meet you in person, because
love to. I've got plans. So next month, I'm taking my car down to Brizzy to get it wrapped in the new Libertarian branding, get my face on it, and then I'm going to do a tour over Queensland. Not sure how it's going to come together, but that's the plan. It'd be great to catch you somewhere on that journey.
Oh, I also can't wait for the videos of that.
Yeah, well, don't you worry. I'll come up with something creative.
I'll include your links to your social media, your X, Instagram, and TikTok in the chat, and also the show notes page as well.
Lovely. Well, terrific, Tim. Great conversation. And thananks to everybody in the chat.
Well, I'll let you get your rest now. And yeah, I will, as I said, certainly hear more from you. Thank you so much for joining me and my audience.
No worries. Well, rest up and go heal. Still getting over my cold. So have a good night, everybody. I'm sure I'll be back again. See yous.
And that's Wilms Front for another episode. Now, hopefully, I will be able to secure more guests, because it's been a while since the last Wilms Front. Now, I will end the show. I'm just putting the rest of Lachlan's Dunder Vikings links into the show notes page there. So here's Twitter X, here's TikTok, and Instagram. So as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, there'll be no Tim's News Explosion at the usual time of 9 p.m. on Monday, because I'll be going to see Tucker Carlson at the Melbourne Convention Centre, the final leg of the Australian Freedom Conference. So there's no restriction on filming inside the conference. So I hope to do a vlog from in and outside. I know that Margot will be there as well. So look forward to seeing you. I know that Richard Wollstonecroft, from the report from Tiger Mountain, he'll also be there. So hopefully I'll be filming some more reports with Richard later in the week, because, well, there'll be so much news that he's interested to comment on. And of course, he's still a regular on Sam Newman's You Cannot Be Serious podcast. Sam certainly enjoys Richard's, he's not used to somebody with Richard's unique takes, particularly on Israel-Palestine. So he and his new co-host, Sue Stanley, OAM, they have a good chat with Richard. So Tim's News Explosion will be at 9 p.m. Tuesday evenings, Melbourne time, on the Wilmsrant channels. And then on Friday, the 5th of July at 8:30 a.m., I should say, is when myself, Iron Duke, and Harry Richardson from the British Australian community and other invited panelists will bring you the United Kingdom general election results live stream. So the polls close at 10 p.m. on July the 4th, which is 7 a.m. Australian time. And the results start coming in from each of the 650 constituents. They all count the votes and then they declare the winner at those town halls. So the results come in overnight from all the seats. They're all announced at once. So we'll probably be going all day. It's very clear that Sir Keir Starmer will, from the Labour Party, will be the next Prime Minister. It's who finishes in the, well, you'd say the top four. Will the Conservatives, the Liberal Democrats, or Reform, led by Nigel Farage, finish second? Now, remember, I can't do all of the Unshackled Productions without your support. So please consider supporting the work of the Unshackled on Substack. That's where I post the links to email links to the Unshackled Productions, the unshackled.substack.com/subscribe. The unshackled.net is still the home of our articles, and you can take out a membership there as well. So the options we have over at Substack: $5 per month, $50 per year, $500 per year for a founding member. We have over at the unshackled.net bronze, $5 per month, $50 per year, silver, $10 per month, $100 per year, gold, $25 per month, $250 a year, and platinum, $50 per month, $500 for year. So please consider supporting the Unshackled's work. Dawn Browning mentioned that Tucker Carlson in Canberra absolutely destroyed that Australian Associated Press journalist. Like, they are the worst organisation. They are even below the ABC. Like, they're at the bottom of, like, the mainstream journalistic food chain. If you're a reporter for AAP, you're a nobody. Nobody would have known who Kath was until she decided to take on Tucker. But Tucker destroyed her with a laugh and a smirk. I mean, she was she was easy to destroy. Now, remember, to help with the algorithm, make sure for all the videos, wherever you're watching, you give a thumbs up, like, and comment below, because that all helps get the word out. Make sure you share as well. So I will keep you on my social medias, particularly my Telegram and X. I will keep you updated if there's any shenanigans in or outside the Tucker Carlson Melbourne event. So far, the only disruption has been Drew Pavlou at the Brisbane event, waving a Ukrainian flag at Tucker Carlson, saying, "Stop licking Putin's ass." Really pathetic from him. He's just basically become a neoconservative war hawk now. He's certainly lost his way, Drew Pavlou. So I don't know if the Melbourne Antifa, the Campaign Against Racism, Fascism, or what's the other group, the Queer Melbourne Collective or whatever, one of those groups is doing a protest against Tucker Carlson for some reason. There is extensive security screenings. There is the metal detectors, the magic wands there. So make sure if you are going, arrive in plenty of time. 6:30 p.m. it starts tomorrow night. I don't know if Clive is well enough because he had laryngitis, couldn't make the Perth show. Hopefully Clive's well, because we don't want him to fall off the stage like he did during his campaign launch rehearsals, because we don't need another earthquake in Melbourne. I mean, I like Clive these days, but when I heard that he fell off the stage, it still made me laugh, because you just think there would have been just some sort of thud there. All right. Thank you so much for watching tonight. I will see you live on air again on Tuesday evening. So remember, stay safe, stay sane, stay optimistic, stay warm, because it is very wet and cold here. And stay happy as well. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to Wilmsfront. Visit timwilms.com to view the archive of episodes. And keep visiting theunshackled.net to view all our shows. And to keep up with the latest real news and analysis,